woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Lord, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howell. She's Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures way up this morning as we have a missive out of China that they think that the willing to resolve the trade war with a calm attitude, at least today. So the Chinese dudes are up 28 points in the futures they no doubt front ran with yesterday. Almost to the point now where I'm not really even accusing. I'm sure this is happening going down, but Dow up 280, 266. Nasdaq futures up 99, so we should have two nice days of rallies here. That would be a good thing. Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir.
I think I was, might have been booted off, I don't know, Joan Esposito. She's a terrific lady. She does a show in the afternoon here in Chicago. She has me on from time to time to answer some of the tougher questions that her board lights up with, like, you know, explain Brexit, explain how somebody can dump Parliament for a while, you know, explain what a yield curve means, that sort of thing. So she has me on, and I think I do a pretty nice job. Who the hell knows? But I think I do. The board always lights up when I'm there. But yesterday,
Did she ask you to explain Pullman rail cars?
Not yet. She hasn't made that mistake. But I just have.
We still got a leg up.
I just had to give Jess a little thing on that on the way in, though. Because she was, the Dunkin' Donuts is closed till 7, so we had to go in the Starbucks. And she was miffed at having
the stupidest doors ever.
She hates the double doors at the Starbucks. So I was trying to explain to her how the reason for the double doors is if you have negative pressure in a building because you have restaurants and grills, that's a way of keeping, in the wintertime, as soon as you open the door, the air rushing in because the pressure in the building is less because you're forcing it out through the vents. And how on railroad cars you had to make sure it's exactly even and so forth. So she was already, you know, had to go through that this morning. But anyway, so Joan says to me, "Well, I don't have any debt, and I'm sure you don't have any debt either. So at least we don't have to worry about it." And I said, "Wait a minute, what makes you think you don't have any debt?" She was like, "No, why?" I said, "Well, you owed a federal government $180,000 per taxpayer." Wait a minute, you can't be serious. Well, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I said, add the state and local to it, you're probably up to about $500,000.
Yeah, it's sitting out there. That's exactly right.
She was not happy. I said, "Are you never going to invite me back?" She goes, "Well, I'm thinking about it."
Yeah, yeah. I had a good day going. I had a good day going until I heard from you.
Until I talked to you, yeah. But, I mean, I said, "Well, Joan, don't you see what's happening in Chicago?" I said, the taxes are coming up every single year. I mean, because as they try and knock this stuff down, you don't think that what's left there in the hole isn't going to come out of your pocket at some point?
But the scary thing, as I understand it anyway, is that they're not knocking it down. They're not doing the things you would do if you were a private citizen in debt, which is you would cut your spending, you would generate as much revenue as you can, but you would cut spending so that you start eroding the debt. That's not what's happening. The debt is still growing.
Because
they refuse to cut unnecessary programs or programs where they can make a savings.
Two things on that. One is, it's not really growing, Lou. How can I say this intelligently, if possible? It's not really growing. You just hear more and more about the details. You know what I'm saying? They tell you they're $1 billion in the hole, and they raise the taxes $1 billion. And next year, the number really was $3 billion. They just didn't want to tell you they were only getting a third of it. And now they got $2 billion left. You know what I'm saying? You never really get the story. The story is way worse than they're telling you.
Well, it probably is, but that's, I mean, whether you publicize your debt or not, the truth of the matter is they are not taking the steps that a rational person would take to reduce the payment. I mean, I, for years, having lived in Illinois, you know, more than 15 years, I interacted with state agencies there all the time in terms of my job as an employment lawyer. And I can tell you right now, you could eliminate the Illinois Human Rights Commission, the Chicago Human Rights Commission, you could eliminate all of those positions with absolutely no effect on government, civil rights, people's livelihoods, whatever. The public employment in Illinois, and quite frankly, in most Democratic strongholds, has become a revenue, just a jobs program. And that's all it is. If you get some performance out of it, that's a bonus. You get some, you know, better law enforcement or whatever, that's a bonus. But the most important thing is to create jobs for people who will then vote for you. That's why you have these monstrous public employee unions and a number of other things, and it's really a scandal that nobody really comes out and says, because it creates a problem for electoral numbers down the road. But that's the truth.
They're not that smart.
Well, I think that's what it is. I mean, well, I okay, think well, there's two. I mean, that's why public employee unions were created.
By the way, I was sitting with a couple of 1%ers last night, and I said, "Let me get Billy over here."
You were with some people on active duty in the U.S. military.
No.
Those are what I call the true 1%ers.
No, these are the 1%er dudes that. I said, "Let me go get the reservation for the table and put it on their 1%ers only." There's differences between. First of all, when people talk about money, half the time all they're doing is slinging BS. Because people will say, a family.
That's certainly true in my case, by the way.
Well, but I'm saying, no, I mean, once in a while, even I say something intelligent. Dr. J and I were still driving in together in the morning before he was doing all the New York stuff. This had to be like 2007, right before the collapse. And state of Illinois actually was like balanced. The market was at a top. Everything was going good, Lou, and they were balanced. And I said, you know what, John? This is the problem with government, is because everything is hitting on all cylinders right now. How's that for that stupid euphemism? There ought to be a big surplus. Because when you look at government is the last resort, Lou, for feeding people and for all kinds of other stuff. And you want it to be that. You want them to be there when times are tough. So they do have increased strains on the system when the economy gets bad and the tax rolls essentially get lower. That's the way they're designed. The problem comes is when things are good and they don't run a surplus. They find a way to piss it all away somehow, which is what you're saying.
Agreed.
But I'm saying the idea that they should be balanced like at all times, and inevitably, and I'm not giving you crap or I would never do that, people will say like a family. Okay. Whenever people say something like that, I said, all right, explain to me how a family works from the day, you know, the gleam in the two people's eyes and they run home together for the first time to the day the last kid leaves school. Or worse than that, till everybody croaks. The family continually plans for times when there will be deficit financing. You save up for education.
Yeah.
Right? And because you know those years, you got three kids in college, you're not making $250,000. Sorry. If you look at a family is not balanced every year. Never, there's good years where the intelligent family saves up for the years that either are bad or you know you have expenses. Right?
But I'm not even talking about that kind of a model. I'm just saying, if you were a rational person trying to reduce the pension debt, for example, or trying to pay down. By the way, my recollection is that in those good years, when the Illinois budget was balanced, they were not weren't they not making contributions to a bunch of pension funds they were supposed to make contributions to?
You know what, they actually, and this is the part, you and I have talked about this, or maybe Brendan, and I don't understand, Lou, that since these things are not, you know, I know that creepy line in the Constitution said you can't lower anybody's pension. What actually happened was, the city came to the unions and said, it looks like we have enough contributions in there, and if you want a raise, it's going to have to come out of this year's contribution. And the union agreed with it.
Yeah, they did.
So I don't understand how, for those 3 or 4 or 5 or one, however many years that was, now that there's less money in there, why the union doesn't have to take the hit for at least the contribution of those years.
Because unions, public employee unions, never have to take the hits for that kind of thing.
Well, but like you were mentioning earlier, I forget what exactly you said, something about the human resources or human rights. We know they don't.
Oh, the Illinois Human Rights Commission. Yeah, they could just eliminate those jobs.
We know that, Lou. But stop for a second being a trained attorney, JAG attorney, friend of Catherine Bell's, all that stuff. Stop for a second and listen.
There's a name I haven't heard for a while on this show. Okay.
I saw her the other night. She was on CSI LA. She still looks good. Anyway, forget for a second like all that. What are you really saying? Like when Elizabeth Warren and her ilk put together this consumer protection group in Washington?
Yes, that disaster.
I got how's that for Southside? We received no shortage of crummy emails. Well, not crummy emails. They were emails given people's point of view, saying basically what an ass I was because how could I possibly be against it? I never was against consumer protection. What I said was we have the Comptroller of the Currency, the Federal Reserve, the FDIC. We got like 8 places already supposed to do it. We don't need 15,000 other people having to go out and get 15,000 desks, 15,000 pilot cabinets, procedures, human resource people, and have another massive building of God knows what they do in Washington to duplicate the effort. It had nothing to do with me not wanting to. So
yeah.
What you're saying...
And especially an entity that was designed to circumvent the protections set into the Constitution by making it effectively unregulatable by either Congress or the federal executive.
Well, they couldn't get the money out of Congress. They were funded by the Federal Reserve, which is all screwed up. I agree with
you.
But the point being is you don't need another whole unit because the other units aren't doing their job. Because what they're really telling you is that the companies have so co-opted the regulatory group that you need another one to start fresh. Well, that part's probably true. But my message to you is Lou Michaels, governor of Illinois, can never get rid of a even if the people in there are playing cards all day, you can never get rid of a department that's entitled Human Rights Department. How does this guy not hear about human rights? How could a chief not care about it?
And I understand that. And I understand why the thing was originally established, too. It was established because a number of other states were establishing their human rights departments, and Illinois looked around and said, hey, this is an easy place for us to park a bunch of people and pay them money for not really a lot of work. And again, these are people that will be beholden to us. And we give jobs to folks that probably wouldn't be employable at this level in the regular economy.
I'm going to say
when you interact with, and I don't know about other state agencies because I've had some good experience there, but when you interact with folks at places like this, they are effectively replicating the role or the job done by the EEOC, and you could simply go to them and say, you know what, the EEOC can handle over many complaints you handle. What happens at a number of these state agencies, but it's especially prevalent in Illinois, is that the state agency is so bad at its job that even the plaintiff's lawyers that I know there don't want to go in front of them. Because it takes forever, and because the results are so unpredictable.
But you can't. This is one of those things, Lou.
Well, I understand. I understand what you're saying. If a governor was to come up, a Republican governor was to come up and say, "Look, we need to start streamlining our government operations. I'm going to start eliminating you know, various entities like the Human Rights Commission. People would go, oh my God, racism is everywhere,
right.
Sexism is everywhere, you know, everybody discriminates against homosexuals, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
You'd have all that stuff going on, and the Fed would say, and the governor could say, yeah, but all that stuff runs through the EEOC right now.
But how does, the thing that you,
And how many other, I mean, Illinois has more layers of government than any other state in the country.
But it's,
how many of those could be flattened?
But you're
flattened out.
I don't know why we're doing this, Lou, is I keep in the back of my mind is this stupid tweet from the Chinese this morning and how much money I know they made by front running it. In this world that we have, in the campaign coming up, watching 20 people trying to debate on a stage, two nights of 10 apiece, and then watching whatever God knows somebody's going to talk to about Trump on the stage when he starts insulting people and talking about the world's greatest economy, and the other person's going to say, well, it's not the greatest economy, you boob. But there is no room there, Lou, in people's ability to absorb, to people's willingness to listen. There is no room there for the stuff you're talking about. There is none.
Oh, I know. At least not right now.
But I mean, I'm going to say we're pushing on ever. I don't know that, Lou. I hope to God you live another 60 years and you get some miracle drug and you're younger then than you are now, and you run for president, and all of a sudden there's a world you're in where there is no ISIS, there is no bunch of losers running around trying to blow up people because they can put their religion in their government. There's no idiot white people running around shooting people with AK-47s at a mall. All that stuff is over. And there hasn't been a murder in 10 years, and you walk up and say, you know what, maybe it's time for people to be able to walk on an airplane again without a cavity search. I guarantee you, Lou, you get nothing but feedback. Everybody's against it.
Yeah, well,
we got to have security.
That's probably correct. I recall the Supreme Court decisions involving the University of Michigan and the University of Texas admissions, and the idea that I believe it was... Senator Day O'Connor made the comment in one of her opinions that while tremendous strides have been made in discrimination and in education and et cetera, that we couldn't eliminate completely the consideration of race in these decisions, but that maybe in 25 years you'd be able to do it. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that. If that's true, and intellectually, that's almost certainly correct. But 15 years after those decisions were made, and after that decision was, those decisions were written, you would now think, if you read the press, that America is as racist as it was before the Civil War. And so, yeah, I understand what you're saying. There are too many, as we used to say in the military, there are too many rice bowls that are going to be affected by cutting out of all these positions, by eliminating these departments. I get that. There are too many vested interests. They have too many lines to the press. Every time you talk about eliminating a federal department or a state department, those people call their friends at the papers and say, my God, we're now going to see a surge in, you know, dirty air, dirty water, racism, sexism. We're going to see a surge in predatory loans. Whatever, you know, whatever the evil was that these things were designed to combat, it's suddenly going to erupt now that you no longer have the you know, public servants watching over everything and making sure that everything works properly.
I think Lou, I'm going to lob out on this one because I can go out on a limb when you're here because you talk me back. Just when you think you're making progress, and I'm going to say that in my lifetime. There's a dramatic amount of progress that has been made racially.
Oh my God!
Think about
when you and I were born. Think about and this is a little history lesson for some of the listeners. I don't know if most of our listening audience, and I don't know how old what our demographic looks like, but if you go back and look at Brown versus Board of Education,
it wasn't that long ago.
A Supreme Court decision made in 1954, 1 year before I was born. A Supreme Court decision that basically said you can't have separate schools for African Americans or other people based on race, but it was addressed at African Americans, blacks. You can't have a separate school for black people in your neighborhood. It's got to be integrated. The legislature of Alabama amended the Constitution within a year, saying that it was no longer the right of citizens of Alabama to get a free public education. They basically shut their school system yeah. down. In places like Virginia, they engaged in a formal campaign called Massive Resistance. And we talk about the resistance movement now being basically aimed at the Republican Party. But Massive Resistance in the South was aimed at a total illegal noncompliance with Supreme Court with a Supreme Court ruling.
Right.
It is the functional equivalent of an, you know, entire states saying, you know what, we're not going to authorize homosexual marriage, and we don't care what the federal government says.
Right.
What well, the idea that you had to have federal troops mobilized to take African American children to school in a state. I mean, that's inconceivable now. And yet we have people jumping up and down saying, you know, the racial climate in the United States is horrific. Sorry, not even close.
No, it's not even close. I have a question for you, because I don't know the history of this, being a Midwesterner. Back in when the Asian people were essentially allowed to come here only because they worked on the railroad, and then most of them went to Canada and built railroads up there, when they essentially settled in, when the railroads kind of, you know, were already built, were Asian people just allowed in the regular schools in San Francisco and L.A. and those places, or they have separate places? They trying to keep people separate there too, or there never was a problem? I don't know.
I did not see. I mean, there was a fairly significant discrimination against Asians in the so-called yellow peril that. That developed around the turn of the century, around the turn of the 20th century. I think they were segregated mainly into neighborhoods, and so it was de facto segregation rather than de jure segregation.
Oh, sure, the language. They didn't want to be by us.
I mean,
when I say that, the people who spoke Polish were all in areas here in Chicago, and Italian, the same thing. I mean, it's not
sure.
I mean, it's the, you know, the Lithuanians were all in Marquette Park. I mean, it's, you know.
And so those things that made discrimination easy, that is the fact that people appeared different. It was rampant there for a while, but you did not have laws passed saying, you know, Chinese all have to be in these schools or Asians all have to be in these schools. I don't think it was nearly that endemic. There was there were so many terrible stereotypes attached to, you know, black citizens right after the Civil War, and that ran up through, you know, through literally through into the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
That you know, kind of fostered this kind of de jure, that is by law segregation that we saw. And that has been, you know, completely eliminated. I mean, and I'm not trying to minimize the issues with racism and the struggle.
But it's right there as a now. What it comes out to a little.
My take is that it's mostly economic now.
I was going to say,
and that's the issue.
See, that's supposed to be my line, because I'm the economic guy. It's mostly economic.
Well, I mean, you can't look at what's happened with black incomes and et cetera, and not if you say, okay, we're much better off than we were in 1963, you know, when the Birmingham riots and I was trying to explain to somebody who was talking about, yeah, you know, the social fabric of the country's falling apart, and I'm going, you know what, I remember very clearly 1967 and 1968 and 1969, when every summer cities like Detroit and
yeah.
Chicago and D.C. and L.A. burned. Okay, I remember that very clearly. We're not there. We're not there.
Depends on what you mean by the social fabric. In a lot of ways, it's incredibly worse, I think.
I don't know, Chief. I mean, I remember you remember this. You know, the chants directed at LBJ at Johnson. Hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?
Yeah.
When Vietnam was going on.
By the way, that was that was a pretty good question.
I'm sorry.
That was probably a pretty good question, a legitimate question.
Well, I mean, I try to explain to people we were losing 200 guys killed a week in Vietnam from 1967 through you know, well after the year after the Tet Offensive.
We have not recovered.
Our casualty rates were very high. And people, you know, when you try to tell it to people now, they go, what?
Luther, the only way we're going to recover is everybody, you're in my age and maybe 5 years younger, we're all dead. Because it's the only way we're going to recover from Vietnam. I think we still haven't recovered from it. To me, it was like yesterday. Hearing politicians talk, it's why I don't trust any of them today. I mean, S&P futures up 27, Dow futures up 259, NASDAQ futures up 94. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Amish. He's Jay-Z on the board, Mr. Lou Michaels. Jay-Z up bright and early this morning. I didn't even have to call her or anything. She was up and ready to go. That's a good thing, Jay-Z.
My understanding is she never went to sleep.
That's very possible. Her friend last night, Emma, said she was going to come in and bout, do business with you and have a bout with you again, but of course she was too tired to get up, allegedly.
Ha.
So anyway, S&P futures up 26, NASDAQ futures up 87. This all comes after China's commerce head says it's willing to resolve the trade war with a calm attitude. I'm thinking maybe too late for that, but at least any calm is probably good calm at this point. Dow futures up 258 around the rest of the world. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 127, 1%. FTSE up 73, 1%. CAC around up 71, 1.3%. So 1% gains across the board there. We're gonna, at some point here in the next half hour, we're going to ask Lou about the Brexit going to the Queen thing. I don't think I've ever heard of that before, but I was researching it yesterday. Nikkei down 18 points, Shanghai down 2. Now, this announcement must have come after these guys are closed. Hang Seng's up 88.3. So I don't think that was bonds. 1.48 back under 1.5. Amazing world. The Bund back under 0.7, 0.71 negative. Japanese 10-year minus 0.29, probably heading for 0.3. Crazy stuff. Our president, though, seems to love the fact that if he can go out and borrow bonds and spend more money where the people give him money for free, he seems to be all over it. So, I have issues with that. But oil up 37 cents, Brent down 4 cents, natural gas 223. We have gold, as you might expect, taking on the chin a little bit, but only down 479, 1544. Silver up again, though, up 11 cents, 1857. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Weather in Chicago today is clear with a high of 86 and a low of 62. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 107, low of 80. Oh, wow. I'm so looking forward to that this weekend. Not. I'm so ready for the cold weather to be here already. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Mets 10-7. The White Sox lost to the Twins 8-2. Diamondbacks were off. No accidents to report. Back to you.
Lou, I got a Cliff Notes version of this, the Vietnam thing. The lady who lives upstairs, she and her husband and son, for me, I ran into her at the Tripoli one night, and husband was out of town, so she was going to carry out for her and the kid. They love the burgers there and so forth. Anyway, so I said, sit down for a minute. I said, okay, we sit down, we start BSing about the house. And all of a sudden, this Asian lady comes in, gives me a big hug, and says, how are you, blah, 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 walks out. She goes, well, what's the connection there? And I said, well, that's Karen. She used to run the bar across the street, and we had a common friend, this gentleman named Al. I don't even know his last name. He was one of these guys, Lou, that came back from Vietnam, did the tours. All the women he knew were married to somebody else. All the guys he knew were moved, that type of thing. And he just, he was a guy who put signs up on the highways, so kind of a job by himself. Bartended a little bit, lived behind the bar, didn't even have a phone. He's never really re-entered. He was probably the best dart guy on the North Side, so if you wanted to win, you needed Al on your team. So he had some talent. But he would talk, and we'd talk about Vietnam and stuff, and I was one of his buddies. He just, one of the few people he'd talk to. And all of a sudden, one day, he has a heart problem, and he's in one of these homes, and the guy's only at the time he's 55, but the state and the VA are fighting over who's going to pay for the open heart surgery, and neither one of them wanted to pay for it. So, of course, while he's in there waiting for them to fight to be over, he dies, right? So I'm pissed off about that, but nothing I can do about it. And so, of course, we go to the wake, and there's only three of us at the wake, And it reminded me of the last scene in Bang the Drum Slowly, where the only guy who showed up was the pitcher. It was me and Karen and the one bartender, Stacy, who's one of the sweetest people that ever walked. Anyway, so this lady's name is Sherry. I'm talking to you. She goes, I got a story sort of like that. She goes, my first job was at Walmart, and I'm in there. And she goes, I was like a manager, so it wasn't really my first job. And there's this guy. He always did his job, always was on time, didn't talk to anybody. And if you talked to him, he kind of grunted at you and was kind of a big guy, so you didn't want to mess with him. And so I'm thinking, I got to talk to this guy, because Sherry's that type. She feels somebody is in some pain, she's going to try and help. So she sits down next to the guy one day, and finally, after a while, they start having lunch together. And the guy, she says, well, what, what's like your background? He goes, well, I was in Vietnam. And she goes, really? And he goes, yeah, like a couple of tours. And he goes, and I just can't really shake it. Guess what his job was, Lou? Guess, on your wildest imagination, what's the worst thing that you could have done over there for an individual? Well, I guess shooting people is bad enough, but...
Shooting people is pretty good, but I would say either going into tunnels or a mine explosive ordnance disposal.
His job when we went to the body count was to go on the battlefield the day after and try and figure out by the pieces of bodies out there how many actual people were attached to them. If you put them all back together, he had to give a count.
Yeah. Okay.
What the hell, over? how could you be right the rest of your life ever after that?
Well, I'm gonna make a suggestion, and I'm you can take it or go with it or whatever, just to help our discussion a little bit. But I would like to talk about a book every time I'm on.
Yep,
and,
we can do that.
And we just pick a book. I'll pick a book and start talking about it, or I'll send you a message and let you know which book I'm going to talk about in advance. But this, what you've just led into with this discussion and the impact of this, leads me to a book, or actually three books. It's called The Liberation Trilogy, and it's history by a guy named Rick Atkinson, and Jess can pull it up. It starts with An Army at Dawn and moves through two other volumes about the liberation of Europe by American GIs in World War II. And I have, when you read it, you'll come up with a couple of things that you'll think about. Number one, how did we ever win that war? When you look at the incompetence and the missteps and the misjudgments and the unbelievable costs that they generated for the people who were you know, on the receiving end of these orders and these decisions. And I'm not talking about the German forces or the Italian forces. I'm talking about our own. That's one thing. And the second thing that comes up is the unimaginable for us, unimaginable sacrifices that the population was making during the course of this war, and whether that would be something would be acceptable now. I mean,
Lou, I'll tell you how we won. According to not me, but the Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy, he said, every day the Germans thought they won, then every day they'd wake up and we had seven more tanks where the ones they knocked off yesterday were standing. Now there's seven new ones.
That's a huge aspect of it. There's a story in one of the books about a German officer, anti-tank unit, and tanks is a good example. Anti-tank unit, with an 88 millimeter, anti-tank gun, which would cut through the side of one of our tanks like a hot knife going through butter. And, he talked about how his unit was overrun. And he said there were tanks moving in a single file line down through a road, and I shot the first one, killed it. I shot the second one, killed it. I shot the third one, and he said I killed eight tanks, and then I ran out of ammunition, and there were 15 more tanks behind the ones I killed.
What was the famous line was, not even the Tiger tank, the one before it, was worth six Sherman tanks. The only problem was it was fighting eight of them.
Well, there's a lot to that. The other story, and this is based on the memoirs of a guy named Otto Skorzeny, who, if you don't know who that is, you probably should. If you think of yourself as somebody who's got a line on special operations forces and things like that, Skorzeny's memoirs talk about one of his units during the Battle of the Bulge. Because the American forces made a very hasty retreat as the Germans began to overrun their positions. During the Battle of the Bulge, coming into an American camp that had been evacuated, you know, less than an hour before, and going into a tent and finding a cake in a box that had been shipped to some GI from his mother in the United States, and it was still fresh, you know, still perfectly edible. And he thought to himself, there is no way we can possibly defeat a foe that has so many resources that they have the luxury of delivering cake, of making it a priority to deliver cake and packages like this to their forces in the field from, you know, 3,000, 4,000 miles away. And anyway, the books, if you read the books, you will get this sense of how did we ever win. The second thing you'll
well, Lou, when we were doing
unbelievable
year,
misery.
What was this year? Was 75 years of D-Day this year, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were on, but I was talking about the practice for D-Day like 6 months before. And how many more people got killed in the practice run than they did on D-Day?
Well, no, that's not true.
Well, it was very close.
The practice run, they had a couple of terrible accidents during the practice runs. And, I mean, that one attack where the German E-boats that were confused with Allied boats were allowed to slip in behind the defensive perimeter of boats in the water.
Oh, but Eisenhower said to use live fire, and one group got there an hour before the other, and we rained fire on our own people. You tell me if that happened today, that Eisenhower would have still been around to lead the thing into Normandy. No way.
That's you have no idea. You go back and look at the invasion of North Africa, or the invasion of Sicily, or the invasion of Italy. The decision to invade at Anzio, the Salerno. And you're going, you guys gotta be kidding. And the unremitting misery of the average soldier and the incredible losses that we suffered because, you know, our generals had, we don't fight like this anymore. We may have to eventually, but we don't anymore. We sacrificed bodies and lives, you know, in a way that I just when I was about it, I was going you got to be
well,
joking.
It's nowhere near what the idiots in France and Germany did in World War One when they would run bodies at machine guns. I mean, it's or the Civil War.
That's true, but I mean,
all right, we got to go to break here, Lou. We'll pick this up when we come back. SP Futures still up 26.25. NASDAQ Futures up 87. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Lou Michael. She's Jay-Z. Jessica Zalewski on the board and doing a fine job this morning. S&P futures up 26. NASDAQ futures up 87. Lou, the more I love it doing this once in a while. I mean, we've been talking about the market with Fari and David in a little bit, but when you look at how lucky we are as a country, you know, when we started, we happened to have a George Washington around, and I read this thing a while back where all the historians, the British historians, were asked to rank all the generals they've ever fought against, and the British fought against pretty much everybody, right? I mean, all around the world, and by far Washington came in number one as their opponent. You talk about Lincoln showing up at a time when sort of we needed a guy, and you know, and maybe now we need somebody, and maybe, you know, somebody might be in the works. But if you look at the history of World War II, and the more I listen to the stuff on the History Channel and read, if it wasn't for a few major, really bleep-ups by Hitler, I mean, it was, I mean, some of the stuff that mistakes he made that were so sweeping, even early on, you wonder, what if he didn't? I mean,
let's talk, for example, about his invasion of Russia, and his failure to consolidate that. I mean, and again, I'm not giving away anything here. But one of the things that you learn when you study the history, especially from the Russian side of things, which I did for many years, is that the Russians are the guys that tore the guts out of the German army.
Oh, sure.
And they, you know, they're the ones that bled Nazi Germany dry on the Eastern Front. So that by the time we came in, I mean, it wasn't like we were fighting against their best. We had some of a number of their best, you know, opposing us as we came in. But in terms of their ability to you know, reinforce what was happening down in the southern part of Europe, and then at D-Day, their ability to reinforce that was severely limited by the losses that the Russians had inflicted on them, and his failure to secure that front was huge.
Well, even before that, Lou, I'm going to start a little earlier. I know you're the genius on the Russian stuff, but I did not realize. I mean, I don't know why I didn't, but I did not realize that he was. I'm sure you read the Winds of War.
Yes.
Well, the part where Roosevelt wanted Pug Henry to, any little thing that was happening in Germany, and I didn't remember this until I saw this special a few weeks ago on TV. Anything was going on in Germany, he wanted to know what was happening in terms of, so he could put his thumb on how close we were to war with Germany. I mean, Roosevelt was smart enough to know eventually it was going to happen, right? When we were,
right.
It was two ships coming at each other in a narrow channel. And Pug Henry kept writing back, the submarine manufacturers are still only working one shift. And Roosevelt really thought he had time. Okay, he had some time. And I didn't realize that when, you know, they went and did the thing with, they grabbed, what, the East Prussia, they managed to connive that out of the world. They went and got Austria, and they went and got the Sudetenland, and they pulled this all off on people by threatening, right?
And people believed. I mean, and of course, we were stepping away from it.
Right.
The guys that were involved in it were the Brits and the French, and they sold. You know, the Austrians. The Austrians welcomed the Germans coming in.
Well, what I didn't realize was when Hitler invaded Poland, he absolutely was convinced that France and Germany, or France and England, would back down again. And when they declared war on him, according to this book, they had pictures of the guy like visibly in a sweat. How bad he had bleeped up, because his generals were telling him, "We're 2 years away. What are you doing?" And he absolutely was convinced that he screwed the population by being 2 years. He thought they would back down and they would give him Poland too, and they didn't. Now, they didn't go into war right away. There was another 6 months. And Robert, sorry, Lim, I'm a little long-winded here, but Robert just gave me this thing to read regarding submarine warfare in North Atlantic. And actually, the day they invaded Poland, just like in the winds of war, the submarine guys weren't ready. They had like less than 100 subs. And fortunately, what they had, a six-month phony war. They went into full production, and at some point they maxed out at like three-something. But the Navy was easily a year or two away from fighting any kind of a war, and how much they had to scramble to put things together the next couple of years, that was a major screw-up on Hitler's part.
Well, it was, but it was precipitated in many ways by the fact that he had the non-aggression pact with the Soviets. And the Soviets and the Nazis were basically working on the same side there. And I mean, he felt that gave him cover to do the invasion. You know, that's why the Soviets invaded Poland with the Nazis. Hitler thought, okay, I've got my eastern flank secured. Now I can turn and go west. One of his biggest, the other big screw up he made was declaring war on the United States after the Pearl Harbor.
I mean, boy, talk about somebody who would have been in a bind. After two or three years of having people going back and forth with a Europe first strategy for the two front war, there's no way we could have declared war there, and we would have had the Asia first.
Yeah. So anyway, the books are the Liberation Trilogy. The author is Rick Atkinson. I can highly recommend them. They give you a flavor of what was happening over there, and again, the unimaginable sacrifice. And if you have doubts about the Greatest Generation or what, you know, what that group of young men did and what the country was capable of in a short period of time, you know, the war only lasted 4 years for us.
Lou, I keep talking about how the Golden Gate Bridge took 3 years, the war took 3.5, the Transcontinental Railroad took 3.5, and the redo of the Burn Interchange is going to take 10.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, just think of the logistics. Every time you wanted to send something just to Hawaii, let alone to the South Pacific where you were fighting, leaving San Francisco, what does a Liberty ship take to get to Hawaii? 6 days? 7?
Yeah.
And then another 6 to wherever you're going. I mean, you're talking about almost 2 weeks to get to the war theater with supplies and people and guns and everything.
So I mean, it really is a... I mean, again, he gets into the minutiae that are so interesting. So, for example, he talks about in the last volume, as the war's winding down, he talks about the casualty processing facilities in places like St. Louis, where you have, you know, thousands of people, mostly women, because that's all that was left to do the work, taking the caskets that were shipped back from overseas, opening them up, accounting for the personal effects that had been placed in there, documenting all this on index cards, because there were no computers, documenting all this stuff on index cards, and then tracking the system of tracking the body with the personal effects to be delivered to, you know, personally delivered by the mail or by courier to the family as the body was returned. And I mean, I'm trying to imagine, you know, you want to talk about ghastly. I'm trying to imagine what that was like.
Oh.
And, you know, what you were dealing with is you would crack a casket.
Well, the strong hand.
Been sealed several months before and then shipped back to the U.S.
Well, the strong hand on top of the whole thing, fortunately, is Roosevelt somehow identified George Marshall as the man in, like, the late 30s. And even though the rest of the country was oblivious that we were never going to be in another war, he was actually going through the ranks and making, you know, age limits on generals, and really, we were a lot more prepared, personnel wise and in plan wise than we ever give ourselves credit for. And a lot of it has to do with Marshall.
I think that's correct.
And his story, but Lou, the funny part was when we went, not funny, but when our guys went into, I mean, everybody knows about, you know, the Japanese soldier was this, that, and the other thing, but the simple fact is, when we went into battle against them, we would murder them, for lack of a better term, because our guys, in the book, there was a list of what the Japanese soldier had versus our guys. When our guy went into battle, it had something like 200 rounds, 4 grenades, you know, 300 pieces of toilet paper, rations for how many days, and you're fighting people with, like, half the time, no bullets, no grenades. You know, I mean, the logistics that we provided to warfare was unreal. And his point was, if I'm going to send somebody somewhere, he's going to have the best chance to get out alive. I mean, he's going to have a gun, he's going to have food, he's going to have bullets, he's going to have a helmet. You know, I mean, as much as you can in those kinds of situations. I mean, which,
and yet, and we can talk about this. I'm not going to do another World War II book, but
no.
I will recommend the memoirs of people like Eugene Sledge, who with the old breed on Peleliu in Okinawa, which talks about the absolute depravity of combat in the Pacific as the Marines, you know, moved into some of these
It was a race war. It was a total race war. Is what it was.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that the war against the Japanese, because of what happened at Pearl Harbor,
yep,
and the atrocities that they committed, was a war of annihilation.
Yeah, total different than the European thing.
With Japan, it was a war of annihilation.
Lou, let's talk about it some more next week, buddy. Have a great week. Hope your weather is as nice as it is here today, although I think it's supposed to rain all weekend. S&P futures up 28, NASDAQ futures up 91. Come back with Mr. Fari Hamzy, and later David, talk about the market, what we should be doing here. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Jay-Z on the board. We have Mr. Fari Hamzy with us. S&P futures up 28.75 now. NASDAQ futures up 93. Dow up 271 is China says willing to resolve the trade war with a calm
attitude. I thought you were short. They figured out you were short, so they really went long?
No, I've been very non-opinionated.
Let me tell you about the Murray and Murray show. This is a life lesson here. I was talking to Jay-Z about that. I don't know if you know about my friend Murray or not. He lends to people like you. You know, if you're short a little bit on that margin call, he lends it to you. Well, all you have to do, pay the interest at Friday.
That's right, just pay the interest.
Sabbath, he collects, right? Because he goes home. That's how the P&L is computed by the wifey. The only interest she has is her shoe room, which only competes with Ferdinand Marcus's wife in terms of interest in shoes. You should see, my condo here down in Florida is about the size of her shoe room in Beverly Hills flat. Well, as interest rates dropped, he had to ease up a little bit on his vig. So and there's no mortgage on the house. The house is paid for a long time ago. Guess what happens? He gets kicked out.
This is not good.
You know why? You know how it works in the Jap world. You know what Jap is, right?
Yeah.
Jewish American princess. In the Jap world on Beverly Flat says, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the P&L yesterday. Don't tell me what you did last week. What have you done for me lately? So he has to rough it out. Guess where he's roughing it out now? Waldorf Astoria on the corner of Wilshire and Santa Monica, where the old Trader Vic's used to be. They built this huge building. So he's by the poolside, and he's confined to Waldorf Astoria.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
Life is very tough for some of us.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Very difficult.
I will say this, Fari, that we have made some very nice trades, only because we have stayed within.
Well, are you buying lunch then?
Well, we've stayed within.
I can catch the corporate and fly in for lunch.
No, we're
go to what's the place down there? That
Pork
Mahone. We can go to Pork Mahone for lunch.
Pork Mahone is closed 2 years ago. Where have you been?
Are you kidding me? What happened?
They closed.
Okay, then we'll go to we'll take it to my place. That's never gotten closed. We'll go to Union League.
You know why the
65 Jackson. That place will never.
Which
is the oldest club in the city.
What you're missing, or by not being here, is that the amount of taxation that's hitting these buildings. All the leases went up.
I bet.
And Pug Mahone's basically said, "Up yours."
Just right, blank.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Up yours.
And, now, how is it? If you walk down, here's the way I used to look at retail. I would walk down Michigan North. Okay, I would walk down Michigan North. And just look at the corner, first floor corner occupancy. How does it look?
I mean,
retail space, but corner of stores, prime stores, Michigan. How does it look? Is it busy?
Yeah,
is it full?
Yeah, pretty much.
Or is it so-so?
Pretty much, but they're starting to get actually some crime and stuff on Michigan Avenue.
On Michigan Avenue?
Yeah.
You mean within the downtown proper, below Wacker?
No, I'm talking about North Michigan Avenue. There's
Jesus.
Yeah, it's
north of the river?
Yeah, some of the,
That's the shishi part of town.
I'm
not sure even they let me in there.
Let's just say some people have found their way there that are there for trouble.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, all right. Well, I guess you go there because you say, I know Dr. J, and they'll let you in, huh?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. All right.
The, anyway.
So, why are we up so much? Last time we were
China
negative 15 and negative 20 when I was trading.
China?
And I was trading a long side, not a short side. It was negative, was building the bottom, but now we're up 91 handles.
You want to ask the real question? The question is China. China said...
China, okay.
We're going to say we have a calm attitude. We're going to give you guys 2 minutes to get your trades in.
Okay, there's a something here that says that from a cap forum that says, China indicates it won't retaliate now on new U.S. tariffs from Bloomberg.
That's right. I'm going to say that the inner circle in China is making so much money trading this stuff that they would love to keep it going.
Yes, exactly. As a matter of fact, I was seeing one of my neighbors out there because I took Tico for a walk right before this. And he stops and he goes, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. What's going on? How does it look? I said, we have the chosen one.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, forget the algos. We have the chosen one. He is God's gift to intraday volatility traders as long as you can manage your risk because you're 3% on the futures, you're 3% down. And remember, it's like and $160,000 is the minimum notional value, right? Each contract. So it's like, you know, if you put five contracts up, you're buying a house for $800,000 with 3% down, and you're going to flip it in an hour. Except those who want to buy it, they're raising their hand. You already know who the buyers are.
Well, as you know,
that's the game. That's all.
As you know, our Protect Index program is designed for people who have protection all the time because we always have puts on the indexes we're long. And the idea of the design of it is that the market creeps up like.
What do you mean by protection? They don't get STD.
Right.
This market, well, anything is volatile. Right?
Well, the design of the program is so that you sell calls, say 2% out of the money every month, and the stock goes up 1%. So you make money on the calls, and you get the 1%. And at the end of the day, the calls play for the puts, and you get to participate in the market movement up, we hope.
What's your percentage down on the put that you buy?
I usually buy right now. I'm buying it right at the strike.
You're doing it at the money.
Yeah, so I'm in the position.
But so you try to do zero risk on the bottom,
right.
And then 2% on the top, and 1% pays for the cost.
Right, that's the idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you're
making 12% a year.
Well, that therein lies. That's the theory. And the idea.
No, I understand. No, I just want to get a feel for it. Okay.
What I'm saying is, but one of the things that I never
maybe I'll give you a few bucks to run for me.
But I never thought for a second that the position would ever be used for, say, quick trading.
Because I know, I understand, of course.
Well, what happens now if the thing runs down?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the put becomes so much in the money, you want to roll the put down. I mean, so we end up having we end up getting longer down and shorter up. So one of the things that the position does is it kind of forces you to buy low and sell high. So whenever the thing runs down, even though the market looks like it's going to absolute zero, we have been disciplined enough to make the normal trade, and inevitably it comes back even though I think it's going to zero. Then on the way up, it looks like we're going to the moon, and we do the normal trade again, and it turns around and goes the other way. We've ended up making the, quote, disciplined trades within the program. A lot of those trades have been very good trades, because you're kind of set up to buy 3% lower and sell 3% higher a little bit. When I say you're going from 80 deltas short or 20 deltas long below to say 50, and in the top you go the other way. So when you set yourself up, it's like right now if somebody bought the straddle every Monday morning and every night when they went to sleep they put orders to buy below the market and sell above. I mean normally
right. With an OCO. One cancels the other.
Well, normally you would no. Why would you? Why would you want it to cancel the other? If you bought low and ran up,
wait a second. Aren't you putting any trading stop on?
No, not. But if you already have the options, you don't need a stop.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, shoot. It's coffee time. I hear you. I'm thinking 3% down. Huge risk. You got to define risk.
Yeah.
You're doing options.
So the idea is, in the 36 years I've been in the business, I'm going to say. Even though that,
so you must own half of Chicago.
No, but I'm saying that strategy would never have worked because the time decay would be worse than how much you could make trading. I mean, remember, we went through like
Murray,
a year or two.
Murray should talk to you.
Yeah, well, how do you know when it's going to stop? That's the point. I mean, the one week I did it, you know, that
it
would be. The,
it works until it doesn't.
It works
right?
Until I try it.
Yeah.
But I mean.
You know, I mean, listen, I'm looking at a very, very simple, that's what I was working on late last night. Just risk management, not the entry and exits, per se, but risk management intra-trade, okay? You're coming at this point, you're leaving at that point. But once you put the trade on, because it's futures, you can't walk away.
Right.
So intra-trade, between entry and exit, I want a little bit finer, more refined, I should say, more robust risk management. But and I know it's going to work until it doesn't. But guess what? I get two trades back to back as a lot like stuff. Because risk is small. If it doesn't, that means regime has changed.
Well, you've got here's one thing for
you. You go back to simulation trading a little bit. See if the market is coming back or not.
You
if
may not,
it's coming back, then you put real money behind it.
You may not
you
like,
just go. You remember, if you start making decent money, you don't need to trade every day.
Well, that's right.
Okay?
But you
or every hour. You just don't have a quota. You trade what you want.
But you can't right now.
Oh, look at Friday. Friday was absolutely outlier. I mean, absolutely was an outlier event. I mean, I worked only 3 hours. 2.5 hours.
But you
it was wild, okay?
Right,
so I took a little bit easier over the weekend.
All right, two things, Farah. You cannot, right now, especially if you're trading off hours, a stop is useless. Useless.
Why? On the futures?
Yeah.
No, it's there.
But you're not going to get filled where you think you're going to get filled.
No, I realize it was not much. Listen, liquidity is so high that you're off one tick, two ticks tops. Unless, let's say you got a newsworthy that is catastrophic, then nobody's going to get filled there, even if you sat there.
Well, how much
about the stop?
What are
the
chances
last? Even if you sat there and hit close button, that means close everything, cancel all open positions. Or open order. I mean, reverse what I'm doing. Go to zero. Neutralize what I'm doing. Cancel any other open orders below and above. Out. That itself, you're going to get a two ticks fill. Three ticks fill. It's news driven.
Last night, if you were short the futures, you better have a call option someplace in your back pocket, because when this announcement came out,
right,
you're going to get filled 15 points away from your stop.
If you were there, you get filled much better. Trust me. If you're working on Interactive, if you're working on TradeStation, you're going to get filled pretty good.
I'm just saying. When I've watched the show last week. Came out the one day, we're up 10 spoos, and all of a sudden on a break,
right,
we're down 10. It was a 20-point move, and somebody did something. It was Trump's bitching about Powell or something.
That's an outlier.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no way.
That's an outlier.
There's no way a stop
but
there.
How many
helps
of those you get a year or a month?
We're getting them like one a day, or one every other
not
day.
Not that kind of moves. Nothing else. Friday. Wait a second. Friday when he went after Jay Powell. We haven't had that in a long time. I mean, really? We're getting 800 points moves a day? No.
That was
one. Listen, I walked out of here. Okay. I closed the position. I had to be somewhere. And I had a doctor's appointment. And I said, this is like 11 something. So I said, Let me take a shower. And I got to my meeting. Because sometimes I come in early and just try to get involved. I said, here with the bathrobe. Hey, let's make some shekels, as they say. And so I come back, 2 bars, 3 minutes interval. Yeah, I usually trade everything multiples of 3, both time and price and contract. Everything is more off of 3. I don't know why. But you know, in 6 minutes, you have totally different market. We're down like 300 points in 6 minutes. Before that, we were 100 points up. I come back, we're 300 points down in 6 minutes. And that's not happening every day.
Well, no. I, what I'm saying is right now, there are times.
At least not in NQ. In some names, like Netflix could be, but that's not the market. That's just a single name. I'm talking about in averages. In the averages, it's not happening every day. No, sir.
All it has to happen is once.
Yes, correct. No, that's correct. That's correct. I agree there. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's what that's... But then it's called outlier.
Well, there are times where I'm saying is normally,
yes,
looking back at a period of time, there was a time we were doing a show, you and I, we didn't have a 1% move in, what, 18 months. So if you'd have bought options
in
an attempt to trade futures, You got clocked every week. But now,
well, I was getting clocked there.
Yeah, well,
commissions.
Well, yeah.
Because I'm impatient. Okay, let's go long, and it goes two ticks up, three ticks down, and then four ticks down. When again, it comes back two ticks up, and then you say, okay, now I really got to get long here. Let's add to it. And then, woof, another 4 points down, and it sits there. The problem is there was no continuation. Even if it's, I don't care which way it moves, I think there's continuation. Why? Because by reversing, with the algo, it makes up on the other side. But if it doesn't move, it just oscillates, what we call sausage. It does the sausage stuff, all you're feeding is your broker. You know,
well,
some days, when things are, the volatility is low, I don't even want to look at my commission report. I'm sick and tired of it. So what I do is money, I walk away.
Hey, brokers need love, too.
I turn off the algo, walk away.
But look at what happens here. These prices have gone up. Now, we're up $3 today. All right, now, if you look last night, this is for August 30th, which is Friday.
Right.
The straddle in the SPY is pushing $4. Now, I'm going to say on Thursday morning.
Now, educate me. Can you see the price now? Is it Friday or is it Wednesday close?
No, this is last night. But so we're up $3. We're $291.98. So subtract $3 from that. The 288 straddle went out last night at, say, $390.
No, I'm thinking that what time is the time stamp of that value of that straddle?
Last night. 415? Close.
I mean, 315 your time?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the straddle's roughly $4.
Yeah, on Wednesday. What I was trying to figure out is that are they going to put the options? Can options go 24/7?
Right. So they can, but the markets will be lousy. But what I'm saying is, Fari.
Oh, then, yeah, you're right. Six months ago,
or maybe before Trump got in, on a Wednesday night, the straddle and the spider might have been $1.50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So right now, we know there's proclivity for movement. And this morning, we're up $3, which is over 1% move in the spider, and you're still not making money you're not further than the straddle. So you need even more than that. So the pricing has come in. So even though it looks like, we're getting this kind of movement, if you have yourself protected, the price of insurance is to the moon, which is the way. When I say insurance, if you buy a stock, the insurance is the put protection. If you sell a future, the insurance is a call option because you've got your cover on the way up.
I'm saying
right now, I don't know that even as volatile as I think we're going to be here, I don't know if I can pay $4 for a straddle with 2 days. That's a hell of a lot of scalping, $4 in 2 days.
Yes, correct. No, I agree with you.
Now, of course, this morning, if you would have done that, you'd probably be a seller here of the futures, right? Saying, okay, we're up 30, that's plenty. And wait for the Trumpkins to say something stupid. We run $3 down the other way, but you need to do that. You need almost 1.5 $3 moves in 48 hours to make money. That's a hell of a lot, Fari. I mean, it may end up happening, but that's a lot. I mean, the break even on that is, I mean, these guys have got this, when I say these guys, it's priced properly. That's a lot. Where do we have the VIX runs out every week, so the VIX is nothing but an indication. But I'm going to say last night these things were a 15 vol, and for a while we were doing what, 6, 7 on the near-term options?
Yep.
So, I mean, the price of insurance is to the moon. It's like, I love that Corvette. Calling a guy up, how much was the insurance on my Corvette? Well, that'll be $5,000 a year, Mr. Hamsey, and you go, I think I'll pass on the Corvette, right?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now...
Not the popular thing down here is a Lambo. Even the soup guy, I put it the other day on the Twitter. I said, even the soup guy down, this is, I said, hey guys, this is Naples. Even the soup guy here drives a Lambo. So, but yes, I guess you could see a Corvette here every so often.
What about the new one in the mid engine? I don't know, that's very un American.
I have no idea.
The new one, engine's behind you.
Again, down here, they're as all American as possible, but the cars are European.
So would I even be able to drive into these places in my Suburban? Probably not, huh?
I don't think they even let you in the city.
Would they let me out with the workers?
Probably. They'll send you up to what's called Immokalee. The migrant workers have a place there. You can go there. And by the way, it got flooded at Irma. So if you get too much rain, don't come here this weekend. By Sunday, you could get flooded there.
By the way, are you going to get this hurricane?
No. Not a direct hit. Oh, please. I'm not sitting through another one like Irma. That was stupid. Now, we're in a compound. 12 adults, 2 kids, and 5 dogs on 5 acres, and it was a double shutter. The house was built such that it was built for a Rhodesian fellow at a state in Rhodesia. No, South Africa. And the house was overrun by the fighting factions, and they did nothing to them, but they just said leave. Okay, so they left them. So this guy comes here as a 747 captain. He says, "I'm not doing that." So he builds this house with a double shutter protection, so that, and it's all concrete blocks, no wood. It's all concrete blocks with a copper roof, 2 Genrex, one for the house, one for the guest house, and it's on 5 acre of land. Anyhow, I'm not going through that. We lost 30 pine trees of the 300. We're gone.
Well, right now, if it hits Florida on the other side,
it's on the other side.
But
my sister's hotels are going to get hit.
But you're susceptible to
Melbourne. She's refixing from Irma. They're going to get hit. One of them, she's got 12 million more to go to finish it. There's 9 floors. All of the floors got flooded. It's facing the water.
Wow.
And the rain came so much. I've never had this. It was 100 years of rain on these floors, and everything got flooded. So just finishing that now. I hear it's coming. So probably I'm going to see sister over the weekend, next weekend coming.
So that was like, so your risk is...
Anyhow, it's just crazy out here.
Your risk is 7 inches of rain if it comes across right where you are.
Really? Okay.
That's, no, I'm saying it's...
I was looking at it last night, yeah. I think I go get some water. I have some water, but I need to get more water just as an emergency. What I'm doing now, because I've been getting my psoriasis under control here, I found out that these ACs don't bring humidity from the outside. All they bring in is a cold freon. They're rotating the air inside, so we had to decouple the nest, you know, the thermostat, the remote thermostat, from the humidifier portion of it, turn it off, and then I've got large Honeywell humidifiers in every room to keep the humidity up indoors. But those, you have to use purified water.
There's a reason why people
can't run out of water, so I've got to go get some water just in case.
There's a reason why you never get me to Florida. Actually, there's a bunch of reasons. Mosquitoes, alligators, hurricanes, humidity.
Oh, hold on. Well, just got to notice we have in the lake number 2, the trappers are in, looking for this one. You know, we have here 3 or 4 small ones, the babies. They come out on the shores, like sunbathe next to you. Well, and then there's a jacuzzi on the other side, okay? Well, they found the 12-footer. They're trying to trap them.
Well,
come on now.
He's too big to sun next to?
Yeah, and remember, this way, the system cleans itself. You do something wrong, they just feed you to the alligator.
All right, I have a serious question here, Fari.
Yes, sir.
Is this gold trade too crowded at this point?
Reg FD, we've been long from 1,400. We went in late, but it's been so far good. But we're nervous, and we think that by December we have to be out. But here's what bothers me. Advertisement. Everywhere you go, they're talking about gold. Every channel. Whether it's MSNBC or CNBC.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
Well, they're talking about... Here's
and also on the... You get your online. Every place you go, do anything. You're doing a price check, or you're doing a Google finance. You want to see the capitalization, or look at the earnings of some stock. Next thing you know, they're pushing your gold. I think maybe the advertisement is too much.
I'm going to say, Farid, that I was long gold. When I say long gold, I never have been a gold guy.
You mean GLD?
We were GDX, right? Actually, the gold miners index. But
you on GDX?
I've never been a gold guy.
Type, I see. Uh-huh.
Well, like my commercial says,
high reward.
But I did it in response to...
Your younger days, you must have been a blondie.
No, I did it in response to central banks pouring money out, because gold derives its value from scarcity in currencies, and all we're doing is pouring currencies out at people. So I was a solid 2 years early, far easy, you know, my usual thing.
Right.
Now, of course, my guys are making a bunch of money this year, which is fine, but a few got tired of the position last year when it wasn't going anywhere, and you know, are not benefiting from it, unfortunately. But the people who have stayed in there, we've had a huge, you know, first half of the year, which is great. But what I don't understand, and David, I think David's right, even though it's not turning out to be that way. David says silver is not a precious metal. It's an industrial metal. And these you know, these Dr. J and everybody else on TV saying, well, geez, silver should catch up to gold. And David's like, no, it shouldn't. But the weird part is silver's always been kind of to me, between copper, which is totally industrial,
right,
and gold. And now copper hasn't gone anywhere. So I know, right, I'm probably early.
Actually, they were down.
Yeah. Well, it isn't going anywhere off.
Also, not much of an interest as it used to be by China.
Well, if all of a sudden...
I mean, they're done building empty cities, right?
Well, as I'm saying, if you think that this trade war is going to start to tone down at all, and if you think China's able to come back their economy at all, I mean, a copper at 257 has got to be a buy. I mean, again, you know, I'm not telling people to go buy it, because even if I'm right, I'm probably 2 years early, because that's just the nature of me. But I got a long
story. I mean, it depends. Here's the point. Remember 2008, 2009?
Yeah.
You bought copper then, you were way early.
Well, yeah. I mean, we got sneaky long one of the copper producers the other day. I won't say the name on the air, but you know, sneaky, real tiny. Because I'm thinking if silver keeps going up, this copper's got to move a little. I mean, you know, gold, there's no connection, I don't think, between gold and copper, but silver's kind of right in the middle. So even today, gold's down a buck and silver's up 16 cents. I don't see that at all. Silver keep going up here, but, you know, I've got a position in silver too, small, but, you know, I might get out of it. I don't think it's got any more legs, but again, I'm probably early to be out too, you know, for our usual thing.
Yeah. I have that problem too. I'm usually early in, early out. Because I'm too nervous, so I try to do zero lag indicators. The problem is that they get ahead of themselves. And so they trigger, and you interpret, and you get out, and then there's always you leaving something on the table.
Well, what you mentioned earlier, I mean, Jan and Pete are on CNBC a lot, Dr. J and Pete, and they're all over the silver. And I'm like, Jan, where the hell were you when it was 14? You know, there was nobody. Now at 18, it's a buy. I'm like, I went the other side of that trade, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway.
But that's what makes the market.
But just for education purposes, there are gold and silver ETFs that actually have the metal in a vault. So they're not futures denominated. So you can trade these things rationally. It's not like trading the USO where it's all futures and you lose money every month in the damn thing. The gold and the silver actually are pretty fair.
The SLV products. And GLD.
Yeah, they're fair products in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you should. That I know whether they should be long or short.
You know,
but
these guys, we're long for. They took deliveries.
Yeah.
Down here, that's the attitude. You know, I want my gun, I want my safe, I want my gold and silver in my possession.
Yeah. Well, it's. Yeah,
it's
I don't know if that's.
Remember, this
I don't
is Trump can, man.
You're in an interesting group down there.
I have no other choice, but except right now they're not. You know, they're not too happy with me.
All right, we got a day.
What
did you get banned from Chicago
on Twitter?
We're up
on the Facebook and all that.
SP futures up 29. NASDAQ futures up 94. Fari, have a good week trading, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Jay Z. Mr. David Adelman in a second. Around the block in the market here, we've got the S&P futures up 28. They've been up all morning, really based on the Chinese message tweet from their, I won't say it's a tweet, I think it's however they put this out, the Chinese announcement from their commerce people that China is willing to resolve the trade war with a calm attitude. Calm attitude, even though they're sending fresh troops to Hong Kong as military pledges to protect national sovereignty. Now that's gotta not exactly ring real well with people from Hong Kong who never thought they were part of this, even though I guess they are, never really thought they were part of China, but no. Maybe they are. Who the hell knows? But anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 127. It's 1%. FTSE up 73, 1%. CAC around up 71. It's 1.3%. So the French are leading the parade over there a little bit. These Asian numbers, I think the Asian markets closed before this announcement from China. So these probably be doing catch-up on Monday if we stay here. Nikkei's actually down 18. Call that flat. Shanghai down 2. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 88.3%. I have to believe they would be up higher than that if this announcement were to come a little bit earlier. Bonds, 1.48. The Bund, 9.7. Japan, almost down to 0.3. It's been minus 0.24 for a while. Now it's 0.29, so they're actually going lower, more negative, I guess, is the right way to put it. We've got gold up down a dollar, but silver's up 18 cents, which is 18.50 on silver, which is really as high as I've seen in like a real long time. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:37. Weather in Chicago today is clear, high 86, low 62. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 107, low of 80. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Mets 10-7. White Sox lost to the Twins 8-2. Diamondbacks are off. And in traffic, we have an accident on Wabash at East Washington. Another accident on I-57 going north just before 127th Street, causing solid traffic. Expect delays up to 30 minutes. And nothing else. Back to you.
So, David, what's up, buddy?
How you doing?
All right, hanging in there.
little concerned about my gold and silver. I don't know how much higher the silver is going to go. And I was saying to Fari, I got along one of the copper companies the other day, because I'm thinking if silver keeps going and the trade thing actually straightens out a little bit, I got to believe copper moves up a little bit. Of course, I'm probably, what do you figure, David? My usual 3 years early or what?
I think copper should be more. It's way depressed and all the oscillators are, you know, down, where silver is, not using the term overbought because I don't believe in it, but all the oscillators there are, you know, real extended. And as far as an industrial metal, I'm very confident that I'm correct that copper is used far, far, far more than silver.
Okay, so why are all the people on CNBC that were never said boo about silver when it was 14 or 15 for like years, all of a sudden now everybody's touting it at 18?
Well, part of it is, you know, with all due respect, and I do respect them, John and Pete, you know, they watch the paper flow and the options, and if they see, you know, quote-unquote unusual activity, I'm not trying to steal their term, but they see, you know, big blocks of buying, you know, at the offer coming in to push it, you know, they're gonna tout. I don't know this, but I don't believe they pay a real, real lot of attention to technicals. And, you know, I think they're more of short-term traders where, you know, breakouts and the like are respected, especially when the paper is pushing it.
Well, it is funny because, as you know, I get that feed from those guys. I mean, I don't really look at the raw feeds. I could, but I, you know, don't really want to. I mean, I get a filtered feed where somebody lists the stuff where everything is trading. I'm looking at this GOLD, which is the old Barrick Gold, right?
It was Barrick Gold, and they merged with the other one. I can't even remember.
Not Newmont.
South Africa.
Not Newmont.
No. Newmont.
Somebody else.
You know, all over, but I think they have a real big base in, is it South Dakota? I think it's South Dakota. No, it was one that had their biggest base in South Africa, but it was traded here, ADR.
Well, I mean, I was looking at, I saw this thing yesterday, and I heard those guys on TV, but I kind of saw it first, that somebody bought, here we are, you know, August, whatever, 29th, and the stock is 1989 today, down a penny this morning, so say it was 1975 yesterday, something like that. Somebody buys like 50,000 or 49,000 of the October 24 calls.
Wow.
I'm like, so the first thing I'm thinking of, and actually, they bought enough of them to where they managed to, this is October expiration on the 18th, they managed to shove the volatility of those things up a little bit, and I'm looking at them going, wow, what I should do, I mean, I haven't done it yet, but I'll look at it today, if the thing's going up there, I don't know if it's going to 24, but if I can buy the 22s and sell the 24s, I'll do that. You know, I mean,
typically what I would do.
Well, you know what,
I would buy the 20s and sell the 24s.
Right. But you know what's funny? I mean, I get this feed from those guys, because I'm doing some work for them. The Nigerian family office has contracted me at PTI and our group here to offer the protected index program to all the people that they have under money. We put a lot of money to work doing that because they didn't really have a protected program with, you know, the years and years we've done it here. So we essentially subcontracted it to them. So it's working out great. And a lot of clients that are very nice and so forth. Anyway, but I get this feed, and it is interesting, David. There are people that we think the market's jumping all over the place. Some of these stocks, Freeport was one of them, Chesapeake was one of them, where people are buying these out-of-the-money calls, you know, 3-4 days in a row, 50,000 a pop at like 50 cents, 60 cents. And 5 weeks later, the stock is down. I mean, so dramatically that those things are worthless. I mean, the amount of money that people piss away in these out-of-the-money calls and stuff. I mean, I would never dream if a stock is 20 unless somebody told me somebody's going to take it over at 30 next week, which, of course, then I couldn't trade at it, right? I wouldn't.
I think what they're doing, and I know exactly what you're saying, and I see it every day on the halftime report again, and this is totally with due respect to them or whatever, but, oh, that option's cheap. it's a quarter or it's 15 cents or whatever. And I mean, especially for those of us that, you know, have ticket charges or whatever, you know, you can't do it. And if you even do it and say, okay, well, I'll add a nickel or a dime or whatever, you know, for commission costs or whatever, and it's 40 cents, okay, I'll risk that. Just time, I mean, again, if you go out to October, that's one thing, but a lot of times they're going out to the this week or next week or whatever, and the time decay on that. And I know they're only playing for a pop, oh, geez, if it's a quarter, it goes to 37 cents. You know, I make 50%, but the odds of that happening, unless they really do have some, you know, big-time whispers of takeover or whatever, to me, in the long, you can make a trade, you can make four successive trades that are profitable. I think it's a losing game.
Well, what I'm saying is there's no way. I mean, Jan is just reporting that somebody bought 49,000 of the October 24s. I mean, I absolutely guarantee you that even if Jan wants to be long in there, I mean, I know how he thinks because I'm the one who taught him, right? I mean, option trade way back in the day. So I know damn well Jan is not going to buy the 24s. I mean, he's going to buy something else and sell the 24s, right?
No, I get it.
But what I don't get...
And again, I'm not trying to poke holes or whatever, but they'll say, hey, I'm in these and I'm going to hold it for 2 weeks, or I'm going to hold it for a month, or I'm going to hold it for 3 days or whatever. So sometimes I think they do participate just looking for their real quick pop. And God bless.
Yeah.
Many times they catch it.
But what I'm saying before, sorry, dude. God.
Right. I don't.
Don't call me Fari.
I do, but I don't yell.
Yeah. I'm saying with this FCX, the one that I just got in the other day, and, you know, I'm sneaking in with a time spread, so I got to, like, talk about one toe. It's a little toe in the water. This thing's just—it's up 19 cents this morning, so it's over. It's 9:14.
And that's all you need is a little pop like that to make these, you know, 25 cent options or 15 cent or 40 cent options pop.
No, what I'm
especially if your cost is zero.
But my point is, where are we? August. I'm going to say in like June or May, there was a chunk of people in a row that were buying like the 12s, the 13s.
Yeah.
I mean,
even 15s.
Yeah, and even 15s in huge numbers, and the stack is down like 40%. I mean, I don't know what those people were seeing, but all I'm seeing is them shelling out a lot of dough.
No, I get it. And yeah. I mean, beyond the paper, I guess they thought, well, oh, geez, somebody's going to tweet that there's a deal, or, you know, something's going to happen, you know, a breakthrough, or Lighthizer's talking to Xi or Liu, the vice premier, or whatever, and that's all we need is a comment, a tweet, a meeting, a phone call, and it's going to pop. And, you know, and when they're right, hey, they get it, and it's big time money. When not, they lose.
Well, here's what's happening to me on this one that I put on in here. I looked at this. I wanted to be a little long, but as you know, David, I love to do this stuff on the cheap. I mean, because, you know, I don't want to spend more on essentially a discretionary position more than $1,000. So what I like to do is if I think these things are sneaking up and it stacks, you know, say 880, I'll buy, you know, maybe the 9 calls next week, sell the ones this week for like not very much money. And the idea is, now you got to be right all over the place because you're doing something on the cheap. You hope the ones this week expire, which allows you to be long essentially a week at the very small price of the spread. So now this morning we've already gone through my 9 strike. So unless it backs up a little bit, you know, maybe I'm up a little bit in it or not, but I was essentially 2 days early. But when you're trying to do something for 12 cents that, you know, other people are paying $9 for, I mean, you got to hit it right on the head, right, to make it. But then again, if there comes a day when you spend 10 cents for a spread, it works out right, and you sell it for 60 cents, that's a lot of money. You know, I mean, even if it's a very small initial cost, even if you put 500 in it and you walk away with 1500, it's a nice day. You know, so, you know, I don't really want to spend a lot on these things because, you know, people are wrong as much as they're right. And my goal is to, when I'm right, I want to make twice as much as when I'm wrong. So even if I'm wrong half the time, I'm okay.
Right. No, I get it.
But I really don't, where this is all heading, I don't really see this, my feeling here, David, and I don't want to be, you know, too international, economic stuff in an area I don't know nothing about. I'll be like one of the people on TV that will tell you everything about China when they've never been there. My feeling is, and again, we go, people who want to tweet in and say I'm wrong or have better information, send me something. My feeling is that both the U.S. and China, in some sectors, have been wounded enough in this thing that if it all of a sudden everything was resolved this weekend, I still think there's been damage. It's going to take a while to recover, if it does. I mean, I think the people who had to sell their farms, they're not going to recover. The next guy might recover. That whole supply chain of the soybeans and all that other kind of stuff, the fact that people have found new buyers from China or new suppliers from here, I don't think the genie goes back in the bottle the way it was in the bottle before. Now, it may go back better or different and better, who knows, but I don't know that this is a one day, everything's okay tomorrow type of thing. I mean, you and I we've been in the ring too long. We've both got broken jaws and lost a few teeth. Even if we declare, you know, we like each other and shake hands, we're not the same as when we walked in there.
No question. Let's look at absolutely most positive outcome. They buy soybeans, they buy natural gas, they claim they're going to, you know, stop stealing intellectual property, exporting fentanyl, and all tariffs are off, and we say all tariffs are off. That's absolutely best case, and there's big time worries about how do you monitor, and are the Chinese, or for that matter us, are we going to really follow through? The fact of the matter is, you know, things like cyber attacks, like, you know, forced partnerships, like, you know, factories that have already moved, Hasbro saying, you know, that they never owned the factories over there to begin with. They just, you know, rent help. And so they found places in Singapore and Thailand, you know, to not just outsource, but literally, hey, you have a factory, here's, buy some labor, we'll pay, and build the toys. That stuff, you know, they've worked on it since the first week after Trump announced the tariffs, because they could see that it was going to be a long game, not a short game.
Right.
That stuff isn't coming. As I told you from that wedding, the people, the factories that, you know, produce furniture, if it's 10%, if it's 5%, if it's 20% that have left for Vietnam, they're not coming back.
No, the question
is, there's not enough of a labor differential or scale that makes a difference. The move back would be more costly.
How much of the stuff in Vietnam is owned by Chinese, do you think? Do you have any way of knowing
that? I think it's less than what I would have anticipated. I would have thought after the war. Evidently, after the war, a number of years went by that they were cozy, you know, huggy-huggy and all together, and then something happened 5 years, 8 years after the war that they fell apart. And I'm not saying they're totally apart. I'm sure there's influence, but it's not what I would call, and especially now with all this movement and whatever, it's probably not a frictionless relationship.
All right, stupid question. I'd love to have the answer to this. And I mean, a lot of it, as you know, David, when it comes to Europe and those places, I dive in and read book after book and try and learn, and I learn from Lou and everybody else and sort of try and pick up on some of the stuff. When it comes to Asia, I'm sort of clueless. Right now it appears, even though our administration, if you don't want people in China buying our stuff, I think you need a law that says you can't buy our stuff, but that's just me. I mean, I don't know what these other guys think, but so right now people in China can buy stuff here. Not a problem, correct?
Right.
If we go to buy stuff there, it's, you know, we can buy 49% of the place, I think. Now, does Vietnam not allow people from China to buy factories there? Are they doing the same thing they're doing here? Do we have anybody who knows that? I mean, if there's 20 factories in Vietnam, are three of them owned by Chinese? Because some of them are owned here by Chinese.
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I don't know.
I have no clue. It didn't, again, from just conversations, and they're anecdotal, and they're a teeny, teeny, tiny fraction of what's going on. It doesn't appear so, but it could be.
I would agree with you, yet I will say this. I mean, and this is not just because of who he is and doesn't seem to have any care whatsoever about the facts and any figures and the truth. I would say that when the president goes out and starts, you know, mouthing off about how people have, our suppliers have turned to Vietnam, I don't give him the confidence for him to say, if it was me there, hey, David, by the way, these people they go to in Vietnam, are they owned by the Chinese or not? Now, I would ask that question before I got up on my big bazoo stand. I don't think he does. Now, I think the answer is they probably don't. But
from the guy from Hasbro, what he indicated was that they were all Vietnamese.
Okay.
And from this furniture guy, he seemed to indicate he didn't really know who he was talking to and buying from, but it appeared to him, because I asked that very question, is this just China saying, hey, we're okay, and just, yeah, we'll build the factory there, and it's really us, but it's in name it's them. He didn't think so either. Again, he wasn't sure. It's anecdotal. It's a hair on a whole body. So I can't tell you.
Because, I mean, it's something our company is here. We're doing a second. Oh, right. We can't do business in China. Let's build one in Vietnam. What's the difference?
Right.
I mean, right?
Well, I don't know how much, it's a far, far, far smaller country. And, it's still agriculturally oriented. And so I don't know what kind of scale they can produce, even if, let's just say for sake of argument, 40% of the businesses and factories moved. And whatever, and we did install factories there and whatever. I don't know how much they can handle.
Well, I'm asking the question because I'm hoping somebody tweets in or whatever and points me in the direction of the answer. But you and I, David, we're getting, we're too old of a cat to get screwed by a kitten type of thing. I know in Chicago.
God, we must be old.
Yeah, I know in Chicago there were, without going into detail on the names, when people do the caisson work for some of these buildings, and I don't even know who's in the business anymore, but years ago, there was a company that basically did mostly all the caisson work for the city. And if you and I were putting up a building and you say, hey, Joe Caisson, how much you want for this building? And the guy goes, well, that's going to be $800,000 to put the caissons in. And you go, well, that seems like a lot. I need another bid. Okay, you want another bid? I'll get you another bid. What do you mean you'll get me another bid? Well, I own the other two companies too. How many bids you want? I don't know. I mean, it would be the American way to say, okay, you want a Vietnamese company? I own one of those too. We'll ship the stuff out of there. I mean, I don't think that's what's happening, like you're saying, but it wouldn't surprise me from Chicago if, who knows what's going on over there? I don't know.
I get it.
Yeah. God, am I becoming nastily suspicious of everything, David, or what? Only because I find out in most cases I'm not suspicious enough.
I've admitted so much. I always was the efficient market model, and random prices and all that, and conspiracy theories, bunk, whatever. I've come over from 0 to 75% in your camp. Because I see it.
Well, I sure hope we go back the other direction one of these days. I mean, I really like the markets better when they didn't look like, 15 people trade ahead of a phone call or announcement like seems to be happening.
Or a tweet.
Well, I think, I honestly believe it's worse at night. I think the Chinese are worse than we are.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I don't think they could, if they find a way to pick up 20 spoons, I don't think they even think for a second they did something wrong.
20, I'm on 50.
Well, what were, last night, were we ever down? I don't think so.
Yeah, not a lot. It was 28.75 and a quarter was the low, which is 42 below. So
we were down 15.
75.
We were down 15, and now we're up 27.
Yeah.
So what's a 40-point move at night among friends?
Especially if you have 20 to 50 lots.
So what, it's $250 on a one lot. So what's $250 times 40? $10,000 on a one lot. That's not a bad evening.
Right.
Hey. The numbers are mind-boggling. What if you lobbed a 10-lot in right before this announcement?
All that they have to do is a vice premier or a big-time trade rep or whatever voices, hey, we're going to talk next week and we're not going to move forward with our retaliatory tariffs. That's it. That's going to be 15, 20 spool handles.
I'm sure our people are on this like white on rice. What do you think? I don't think so. David, have a good weekend, buddy.
Okay,
SP Futures up 26. Thank you, Jay-Z. NASDAQ Futures up 86. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.